Welcome to the Josh Bolton Show, where we dive into interesting and inspiring conversations. And now, your host, Josh Bolton.
Welcome, everybody. Today we have Allison Holshoft. We're going to talk about her journey going through business, scaling it, and then eventually selling it, the different adventures in between, and her realization of she actually wanted to be an entrepreneur and a business owner. Here she is.
Hi. Well, thank you.
Thank you. So you were mentioning earlier about your whole story. Can you give a quicker summary this time to the others?
Sure. I founded a business in 2006, grew it, sold it to private equity, built a national platform for them, and realized that I wanted to go back to being a business owner again and helping other business owners grow their business and practices. So after being an entrepreneur and working for myself for well over a decade, working for somebody else after selling my practice wasn't where I was happiest.
What was the initial thing that made you realize you want to start your own thing? Was it the freedom? Was it the money kind of thing?
So when I first started my business, it was because there was a need in our community for a service that wasn't being provided. When I sold my company, became an employee, and then decided to start again, it was really because I realized I'm not a great employee. I love working for myself. I like making my own rules. I like being able to grow at a pace that is comfortable for me, which is pretty rapid. And I like to do things quickly and I like to be the boss.
That's awesome. And so you were mentioning your company that you had before you sold it was helping autistic people, right?
Yes. Yep.
Can you give the others a little more detail on what that was? Because you gave me a very good overview, but I didn't even hear the details.
Yeah. So my company specialized in providing a service called applied behavior analysis. So when a family receives a diagnosis and their child has a diagnosis of autism or has severe problem behaviors, there is a service that's provided called ABA services. And that's where we target socially significant behaviors. We are able to understand the functions of those behaviors and then put protocols in place or programs in place to help serve that child to be more successful in their home, in their schools, and in their communities.
Interesting. Okay. What was the caliber that you would work with, from mild to very severe kind of thing? Or was it more like a middle part?
So I started my company and I started in the field because I was really passionate about serving that early intervention model. So newly diagnosed kids and families who are just finding out their child has autism and really focusing on that early intervention, which is like 2 to 5. And I was trained under a model out in California. And so that intensive early intervention was what we were all about. But we quickly realized those kids would get older and need additional services. And so then we would roll on into the school services and less maybe intensive services. And we also realized nobody was serving the kids who were 10 years old and had severe problem behavior.
So I'm just thinking, severe problem behavior, is that something a different diagnosis completely, or is it the same thing, just a different topic?
Yeah. So typically they were kids with autism who were showing severe problem behavior. So not necessarily a different diagnosis. Although some of our kids we would serve would not have a diagnosis of autism, but would have behaviors that were impeding their ability to be successful in their school or in their community, or even safe.
So I'm curious, would ADHD apply into that?
Yeah. We often had kids with ADHD who had impulse issues and maybe oppositional defiant disorder. And so functioning in that everyday world of a quote unquote normal school was difficult for them. And those kids would sometimes become aggressive or shut down and have difficulty learning in those environments. And then we provided an alternative environment to serve them.
So what was the alternative service, the environment? Because the reason I asked specifically ADHD is I had it, but it was back in the 90s when they figured it out. So they were just like, you're going with the not full mainstream, but the kids in between, the ones we don't talk about. So it was just when we talk about these different topics, like I do have some experience.
Yeah. So oftentimes our teachers were, they would specialize in ensuring that we understood where problem behavior was occurring or the function of why it was occurring. And so we worked really hard to provide an environment where there were frequent breaks offered, that the curriculum that we were teaching was really functional to our students. And, you know, really just ensuring that, because nobody chooses to be naughty, right? And so we wanted to ensure that we identified if a behavior that was problematic was occurring, where a student was getting up and leaving the classroom or was shutting down, we could identify what the function of that behavior, why it was happening, and put in an appropriate intervention versus just guessing. And so we used our science behind applied behavior analysis to really create an environment that was specific to that child's learning needs.
So what are some of the situations without, I guess, getting in, unless you can get in details, what you would do, let's say if someone that was just tapped and you clicked the pen a lot, like what would you do to help them with that?
So the function of clicking your pen a lot, what is that providing, right? For that student, particularly, does it help you stay on task and attend, right? Does it just feel good when you're doing it, right? Mm-hmm. So every behavior has a function. So why are you doing this, first of all, right? Does it help you attend better? And then the goal is with behavior analytics is once we identify what the function is, then we want to find a socially appropriate replacement behavior.
Right? Yes.
So if you're a pen clicker, maybe you go to something that's more socially appropriate. So what you can't see me doing right now is when I am focusing, because I too struggle with ADHD, I will rub the underside of my fingernails very quietly where nobody else knows that that's happening, because clicking a pen would be aversive in this situation with you and I.
Yes. Yeah. That's funny, because that's what I've recently been doing is when I had a nervous tic, I didn't even realize until a certain point, I would take the pen and I would click, but then I would also like pull on my hair. But there was a certain point I had a bald spot because I was pulling too much. So that's where I do the same thing. I just kind of like rub my thumbs together.
Yeah.
It looks like I'm just like trying to be all meditative. I'm like, no, I'm trying not to be annoying.
I sometimes will wear a rubber band or a thin bracelet on my wrist. And I will sometimes fidget with that because it helps me attend. I used to chew gum, but as a professional and working with business owners every day, they did not appreciate me chomping on my gum in a Zoom. When Zoom hit, I had to relinquish that behavior and replace it with something else.
Interesting. So then from your experience and insights, what is the nervous tick, the need to move with something, the root cause you keep finding for it?
So for which behavior?
The nervous tic, the fidgeting with something.
Oh, yeah. So I'm an adult with a diagnosed ADHD, right? And so my attention to detail or my ability to focus for long periods of time, it's difficult, right? It's a behavior that I've struggled with my entire life, right? And so my children are now in high school, and some of them, and they also deal with it. And so it's about figuring out what helps you focus the best, right? I focus really well in a calm environment that is, there can't be lots of activity going on. I could never do this interview with my children or my employees walking by right now because it would be really hard to focus. So oftentimes for me, a lot of those behaviors will come out of my inability to focus and attend to something. So I found something that helps keep me on task.
So I'm just personally curious, how did you get focused enough to scale your business?
I did try meds at one point in time, but I think my ADHD actually is part of why I'm super successful. I can bounce from one task to the next. And it's almost like an adrenaline rush for me. I think that's actually what makes my ability, especially now that we're focusing on other people's businesses, like I'll talk to 10 people a day about their business and what we're targeting. And I love moving from one to the next. And my goal is to have an outline where we are identifying the problem, right? Identifying the root cause of the problem. So not getting buried in the weeds and the tiny, tiny details, but let's identify what the problem is. Let's identify what happens if I solve that problem. Do I make more revenue? Do I decrease turnover? There's always a root, right? So what happens now that I've identified the problem? What's the solution? And what gets better once I solve that problem? Mm-hmm. And what does that do for my business? And so it's just like checking a box in my brain. And we do that from client to client.
Yeah, I have to agree. I'm very similar. I'm not personally, like, for me, I'm not visually good at seeing things. Like, if you tell me apple, it's not the red apple with the gloss and the leaf. It's more like the Apple logo, the silhouette. And that, for me, when I do stuff, I mentally try to recall whatever checklist and just be like, oh, it says whatever. And now I just do that. And it's like, okay, I'm done. Yeah. Next thing.
I tell people this, I live my life in checklists. So
yes,
if I'm starting to feel overwhelmed, I will create a small checklist and even the smallest things, because task completion is how I resonate with what's successful to me. I like completing my task from start to finish. No matter what the outcome is, I like to start it. I like to finish it. And then I feel at peace, I guess.
Yeah. You feel satisfied. You did something and you're like, okay, all right, next one. Yeah, I've been talking to different people, and one of them also, he gave a tip, and he's like, when you're doing something, like, play music. And it was just one of those, I sat there, because I realized in high school, I got a lot done, but it was like, I always had music running. So it was one of those, I was just edgy kid. I had to have my like headphones in kind of thing. But I realized now that I'm adult and I've been reading, I'm like, oh, I don't really listen to music anymore. So I started recently, and I'm like, oh, that's literally the trick now.
Yeah. That's funny. I almost always have a TV in the background that just has music playing. I'm not even sure what's on it, but I just need a little bit of that white noise in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's what I've gathered. I have no data for it or anything, but I think it's for how our brains work. We just need just a little stimuli that we kind of are pulled, but not really.
That's right. It's too quiet. I think I would get bored.
Yeah. Or start fidgeting a lot. So then how did you, when you initially started your business, I'm assuming it was, well, all business need to make money, but it wasn't the sole intent was just to make money, right?
There was no intent to make money. So I started my business with $500 in a checking account. And the true fact that our state had no services at that point in time that did what we did, which was intensive early intervention for kids. And the studies had shown that if you provided intensive early intervention and you did it well, there was a study created in UCLA by Dr. Ivor Lovaas, and it had shown that you could change the level of somebody's IQ, right? So there was research behind this, and you could increase somebody's IQ points. And you could also, you could decrease the socially significant behaviors that were making life difficult for these people. And so I had spent some time with adults with disabilities and kids with disabilities, and I had advocated for parents to bring this because I had seen firsthand how high quality intervention really made a life changing difference to these kids. Kids who you didn't think would ever go to public school were now entering public school systems and being successful. We just didn't have that service in the state of South Dakota. And so the business was started because there was a young man who was two. We had just diagnosed him at the clinic and that I was working for. And he needed this, right? I knew that it was likely if he received these services and they were done right, he would have incredible success. And, you know, he's on his way to college next year. We met him. He was nonverbal. He wasn't toilet trained. He was still drinking out of a bottle. He was a little over 2 years of age, and parents were severely concerned that his new diagnosis of autism meant he wasn't going to have great success in life. And I saw him and I thought, you know what? He shows the signs of a kiddo that looks like he's best outcomes. And I wanted to make sure that we were providing to him the best quality of care that could be out there. And so I put $500 in a checking account in a whim. And I thought, if nothing else, if I don't make any money at all, which I had no intent to do because I'm a teacher by trade, I thought I will help this one student, will help this one kid, and I will change the life and his life path and change his family's lives, right? So he can go into the community. He can be successful when they go out to eat or whatever it is they wanted to target with them. You know, almost 16 years later, seeing him go off to college and be super successful in public school and just watching how his life looks different and knowing we were part of that early intervention phase that made all of the things he's doing today possible. That was a big deal for me. And that was success. But there was no intent to make money, right? I grew up in a tiny trailer house with two bedrooms standing in line for government cheese. I didn't need to make money. I just needed to do good in the world.
Yeah. And I think from what I've gathered with different entrepreneurs and people in general, that it is just like you. It's like, I saw this problem, but I didn't really give a crap at that time if I was going to make money or not. But just like, oh, wait, I do have something. Maybe I do need a charge now.
Yeah. I think that's actually what I see with almost all of our clients. Very, very, very few of our clients, we have over 30 across the US who do this business. Rarely do they come to the table because they're like, hey, I want to get rich. It's always, I want to serve my community. I want to help these families. I want to help these clients, which is really why it's so easy for me to get behind them and help put in any sort of business infrastructures that's going to make that journey easier for them.
Right. Yeah. It's, have you read Simon Sinek's Start With Why?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Have you read Simon Sinek's Start With Why?
I have not.
So everything you're saying is exactly what he says, is find the rally flag. He's like, even if you don't get paid, it's like, well, obviously it's business, you get paid, but he's like, it's the metaphorical. If you never get paid again, everyone knows. Oh, he's like, he refers to Apple. He's like, you know, if Apple, whether you like them or not, they're innovators and trendsetters. He's like, people who hate Apple even know this. He's like, you want to have like your rally flag down so no one can say otherwise.
So Josh, it's funny. I've always said in life, if you set out to do good and do right, your business will be successful, right? If you run your business with integrity, you come with a servitude attitude where I'm going to serve my clients, I'm going to do the best that I can, your business will be successful. As long as there's a problem that you're solving, your business will grow.
Yeah. Because word of mouth is way more powerful than we give it credit.
Right. That's right.
Like, as long as social media is nice, but it's one of those, it's more like people want to be entertained. But it's like, if we were in person, you're saying, oh, hey, you know, there's this great pizza place. They gave me a free pie. Like, I really recommend you go because they may give you a free pie. You might've just gave them a lifelong customer right there.
Right. We actually have a whole team of partners at Oboke Consulting, which is my consulting company now. And they're all people who have done right by myself as I grew my business. So people I used when I was struggling with an auditing issue or an HR issue. So people who had earned, I guess what I would say, my stamp of approval. And those are the only people that we work with. And then I recommend them to our clients. So I bring them into the circle. I have them help solve our clients' issues. And then at that point, they can choose to work with them or not. But it's interesting, because we've helped build out lots of businesses by doing this. We have an internal biller that we have help us solve our billing issues. And then when I have a client who needs that, I'm like, oh, I've got a girl for you. Let me get her. And I think it's been really great to watch her business grow as well.
Yeah. It's like, if you have a problem with billing, no problem. Like whoever it is, she'll fix it.
That's right.
It's reasonable pricing. The biggest thing I see is, like you said, do good by others and they'll do good by you. So what did you do before your actual business when you realized, like the moment you just was I'm done with this, I'm actually doing my own business?
Well, so the first time I started my business, I was working for the state of South Dakota in their autism program. So I was consulting across the entire state. And what made it a done moment for me that day, because I was, you know, I was newly graduated from grad school, making a whole $36,000 a year and scared to death. I was 26 and thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do with my life? Who quits their job? At that moment, there was a couple of things. I realized that I had big visions and I loved to move fast and red tape annoyed me. I'm a betting woman. Like I love the tables in Vegas. And so at the end of the day, I wanted to bet on myself. And I thought I could do it. Fast forward, right? Over a decade, I sold my company for millions of dollars. And yet, when I chose to leave the corporate world to start my practice again, I was terrified. I was
really
terrified. Of course. Who isn't? I had sold my company. I had millions of dollars in my checking account. However, I have 6 kids. I have a husband. I was supposed to sell my company and relax and sit back and have a cushy corporate job. Well,
that didn't work.
Right. Didn't love it. I wasn't happy. I didn't like working for someone else. And I also had another big vision. And so, you know, I think at that point I was terrified. So I said to my husband for probably 2 months, like, I think I want to go back to work for myself. And he was like, why do you want to assume payroll? And work long hours and drive yourself crazy. And I was like, but I was happy crazy. And so for me, it was the moment that I was like, I really do think I can take this to the next level. And I wanted to go back and help other business owners. Like I thought to myself, okay, I have a pretty good track record and I'm scared. What about those people who want to go and grow their company and sell it, but don't know what's coming down the road, right? It could be great. It could be, you know, terrifying. It could be the worst mistake of their life, but I wanted to be transparent, right? I just wanted to say to people, here are the resources. You don't need to sell your company to be successful. You can have an incredibly successful company. And if you're feeling stressed and overwhelmed, let's help you unpack that and give you some actual tools to make your business run better, more efficient, right? So you can make the choice to sell because you want to, not because you feel like you have to. And I wanted to give that back to other business owners. So yeah, of course I was scared.
I don't know. I want to say one successful business starting, scaling, and successfully exiting, because the exit is actually the hardest part for everyone.
Yeah, it is.
I would say like you've literally had that one massive rodeo. It would be like, okay, I can do it. Other than like the initial, how am I going to get sales and marketing? I just assume you'd be right into it.
So when I first started my consulting business, I was only targeting those people who wanted to sell their business. And do you know what I found out real quick?
What?
Everybody wants to sell their business until I show them how to efficiently run it. And then they're like, just kidding. I'm going to sit back and enjoy this ride.
Really?
Oh, totally. I would say at least my first five clients, as soon as there was money in the bank, right? Cash flow was never an issue. I was handling the management issues alongside of them. They felt well supported. They could see the end in sight. All of a sudden, they were so much more relaxed that they were like, I actually don't want to sell my business yet. I want to have a plan to get there. But right now, it feels good to be back in control and be a business owner. And it's what I know when you're helping. So it wasn't a very good market. I had five people I brought on to sell their business. And they were like, this is going pretty great. Why don't you just stay on and help me run it? And I'm like, oh, man, I'm terrible at selling people's businesses. Because I don't know what's on the other. I know what could happen on the other side. But when you sell your company, you don't always know who you're selling to. Now, right. I'm fortunate. I've gotten to meet a ton of buyers. I was a buyer, and that was super helpful. But there was a lot of unknowns that I couldn't control. But I could help them control their existing business.
This is true. So I'm curious, is there just one particular business now you work with, or is it like consulting, warehousing, et cetera, like you name it, do you help them with that?
Sure. Yeah, we've actually, not on purpose though, right? We set out to really serve service-oriented businesses such as like occupational therapy, speech therapy, applied behavior analysis, special ed day schools, like stuff that I really did have deep knowledge about. However, growing, scaling, and selling your business was pretty much universal. So had an opportunity to work with some bar owners, had an opportunity to work with a monument selling company that sold gravestones. So not by a purpose or a mission or a drive to serve all those other businesses, it just happened that business is business. And I tell people this all the time. We're going to be working with a new client who's opening her own midwife clinic, right? To deliver babies. I've never delivered a baby, but I do know business. And so what we found is it didn't matter if you had Joe's Pizza Parlor or an educational service agency, that the back end part of that was we had to identify the systems in your business, the infrastructure that was needed, the cost of your customers, the cost to serve, what your profitability goals were. And either way, it always worked out to the numbers. And so, yes, we have expanded beyond just the service agencies, but not on purpose.
Okay. Because I was thinking, I'm like, the way you're talking, I'm like, maybe like a warehouse company because of the bartender. It's like, hey, this lady just literally came in and fixed everything within 3 months. It's like, can she help me?
Yeah, that has happened. The bar story is actually was that they came to me and said, hey, we know that you grow and sell businesses. We can't sell our business and we're losing money every single month. And so I went in and I thought, well, I'll assess the cost of goods. I'll assess the whole program, just like I would an agency that I'm familiar with. And it was quick. Within about 45 days, we identified a way to increase their profit margins, show them where they were literally burning dollars and put a plan in place. And they were able to sell their company 3 months later and profited nicely. And so, well, by the time they sold, they were actually making money every month, which is a whole lot easier to sell than a business that's losing money.
He's like, why should I buy you when you're losing money?
Right.
So I'm curious then, when you were talking about the business end of everything, sorry, my brain's going real fast, I'm trying to slow it down. is when you were like helping with the bartender, the bar one, was the, now I can see where you say the owners would say, I want to keep you on and just keep going. Cause I'm like, wait, why would you want to sell if you're profitable at that point?
So we try to identify that early on. If you came to me today and said, hey, Allison, I want to sell my company. We go through, why do you want to sell your company? Are you just really overwhelmed? Are you tired of dealing with the day to day? What does that exit look like? So if you're going to sell your company, is it for $500,000 or 500 million, or is it 50 million? Tell me where you want to exit at, because we should identify how you need to perform today to get that exit multiple, right? Are you going to sell your company and then take a break for 2, 3, 4, 5 years and go back into the business? Are you going to do what I did, sell your company and then start all over and do something completely different? So we try to identify, tell me why you really want to sell your company today. And the first thing we do is we solve those issues right away. So if it's staffing, if it's managing your team, if it's, holy crap, I'm not making payroll. Then we sit down and figure out, but why are you not making payroll? Because you're servicing, you're providing something, you're selling something. So money's coming in. So why are you not having money at the end of the month to pay your payroll? But a lot of people do say that, like being an entrepreneur is a lonely, it's a lonely island, right?
It is.
You are the only one who is working for your business in the same manner, not as an employee, right?
Like right.
When I had, 500 employees, I was paying 500 mortgages, not just my own, right?
Right.
But like, that's a big heavy lift to feel like you're the only one continuously watching out for the growth and the success of your business. And it's also hard, if as an entrepreneur, you probably know you spend a lot of your time with your employees, right? But they're still your employees. So how do you build a network of support that doesn't make you look weak, that, you could, because you don't want to go to your employee and be like, oh man, we can't make payroll, or oh man, I don't actually know what to do in this situation. What I try to coach business owners on is it's okay to not know. And it's okay to say that out loud. Like it's okay to be a little bit scared. Just be organized, be a good steward of your money, be thoughtful in your responses. Don't knee jerk response to anything that comes down the road. And I think that makes a difference because business owners feel very protected. Like I have to keep all this. I'm the only one who's managing it. And so it's everything from learning how to assess, do you have the right players in the right place, alongside of you. And I think my biggest fear when I started my company the second time, it was truly rebuilding my team. That being said, super thankful that I decided to take the journey because I have incredible employees now and partners and team members who are helping grow another really big empire that I had no idea how I was going to get from starting it to, having a business making millions of dollars every year.
So I'm curious, you were mentioning the fear of not having enough for payroll. Let's say hypothetically, I came forward with that. Like, I have a good business. I have good consistent cash flow, but for some reason I can't make payroll every month. Would that be like, you'd come in and be like, well, what's the sales? What's the marketing kind of thing? Yeah.
So we first identify, right, where is utilization of employees? That's the number one thing every employee doesn't realize, or employer doesn't realize, is you're paying somebody to work. And when you're paying them to work, how much of that time that they spend is actually generating income for your company, right? And then assessing all of your expenses. So we really target key operating indicators. It's the first thing. Everyone's business has levers that make it move one direction or the other. And the second part of that is your budget. Your budget is do or die. The first thing, we have a free budget template on our website. And the first thing we tell people is make sure, if you don't ever talk to us again, grab the budget template and sit down, whether it's your startup budget or your monthly budget, you need to know where every dollar is going, coming in and going out. And then you need to know how to grow that dollar, preferably not the ones going out.
Yes. Yeah, that would be weird. So then I'm curious, first of all, what's your website so everyone can go pick that up right now?
Yeah, it is www.obokconsulting.com, obokconsulting.com.
Okay. And then there'll just be a template, like a tab, say click here for it.
There's also a calendar link. So a lot of times business owners are like, I'm not even sure what I need, but there's a calendar link called, I think it's www.obok30.com. And you can set up a one-on-one call with us and we'll walk through whatever issues you're having. Because I think even if you chose not to be a client, it's really nice to talk to somebody who might be able to point you in the right direction and give you some immediate resources. So my goal is not to get people on the phone and sell them. I'm always like, tell me your issue. What do you need? Well, let me see if I can help you solve that. And then later on, once that issue is done, let me know if I can help you. Otherwise, it doesn't do me any good to try to sell my services to people who don't need them, number one. And number two, oftentimes people just need to talk through it and be like, yep, that's what I needed. And it may or may not be our assistance.
So I'm just it's a 30-minute free call, right?
Yep.
Okay. That's really nice. Is it mainly just you or do you have like a team of others going in and talking to?
Yeah, right now it is mainly just me and a lot. We have a whole robust line of partners. So we have people who specialize in finance and QuickBooks and HR. And so we have other partners that once you become a client, you have access to them. So it's all the same people that I have helped run my business. You have complete access to with your monthly package, but that initial call, I think it's really important to have that one-on-one with people and see if we can help, you know, strategize a plan for their business. One of the calls I received a couple months ago, right at the beginning of summer, was a landscaping company. And they need things like, hey, Allison, I'm in this state and I need help figuring out startup capital. So I have a very small business, but I need to invest in machinery so that I can take on this massive amount of new clients that are coming in the door. And so my team helps look at, you know, what are the resources within their geographical region? How do we help them get funding? You know, how do we teach them to stay away from loan shark loans or what I would call like short-term capital loans that are going to, you know, rob them blind over the next however long. So how do we help them? And then how do we help them realize there's a business model that needs to be formed very quickly? What's your one pager, right? How much revenue do you want to make on that revenue? What's your profitability margin that you want to have? How are we going to target those clients and what's the timeline to do that? And so when we're walking through that, I always say to people, so one, are you protected with your liabilities? Do you have a business model? What's it look like, right? So you could tell me you want to make $1 million by year end. And I would say, okay, so let's walk through how you're going to do that. And we try to put that onto just a one page summary that says, you know, here's what your goals are. Here's what we'd recommend doing first, or at least do these things so that you can move to the next level.
Right. Yeah. If you're going to try to make $1 million in 1 year, it's hard, but it's not impossible.
And it's definitely not impossible.
Yeah.
I think it took a total of 4.5 months for me to do that, starting my new business. So
interesting. So then, did you mostly do sales or did you hire someone, and train them up and then send them out kind of thing?
It's a great question. So we don't do sales, right? I don't even market myself well now. So you asked me about my website and I had to stop and think for a minute. Even when I was a service provider, we never marketed because we didn't have to, right? So I started this new business with one client who told two more people. And then other people had heard about the success I had had with my previous business. So then they told a couple more people. It grows fast. We did just do our first Insight conference a couple of weeks ago. We went to a women's business conference in applied behavior analysis, and we were able to connect with some clients who needed our services. But I also I'm cautious, right? Right now I have myself and I have some partners that work within our company to help serve our clients, but I'm all about quality of care. So I like to grow steadily and I want to show results because if your business does well, that means I'm doing my job well. Just like when I was a provider, if your kid was making progress, that means I was doing my job right. And so right. I treat this business model the exact same way because these businesses are people's babies, right? Mm-hmm. They've sacrificed, they've spent late nights with them. They've put every dollar they've earned into them. These are people's children. I mean, this is what they've done. So I'm very cautious about just going out and having somebody, you know, try to sell it for me. Cause it just, I don't think that would be the right model.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going for quality over quantity. And the next question was going to be, then what is your baseline? I know each case is different, but your baseline per price per person.
Yeah. So we have three tiers in our model. We have a $1,500, a $3,000, and a $5,000 model.
Okay.
And each model is on all one-on-one. And what we do is, as you gradually go up the tier, right, we provide more hands-on service. So if you're a $5,000 tier, we actually probably are, you know, if you had a biller walk out, we'd probably pick up your billing and do it for you. I'm probably coming out to see you on site. I'm helping manage every facet of your business with our partners, but you also are accessing our partners on a probably 6 to 10 hours a month. And so that means if you don't have internal HR, we have a partner that comes in and she's actually your HR generalist because you only need her 6 hours a month. So mm-hmm. I help manage her to ensure she's doing what she needs to be doing. And we have a partnership to keep those opportunities at a no cost to our clients. So I actually pay, I eat into my profit margin to pay for that support. And then once you're stable, you have a choice. You can choose to hire them on as your own, or you can continue to be with us and we'll help manage you. We've also just launched a group coaching course. And really that was because there were so many startup entrepreneurs who wanted to start a ABA business or speech or OT or PT. And they were getting stuck in the early stages. So they didn't have any money, right? So they couldn't afford to do $1,500 a month because it was taking 3 to 4 months to get them to make money. And mm-hmm. so we realized we needed just a very initial class that said, do you have your tax ID number? Do you have liability insurance? You know, do you have a business plan? Do you have a budget? Where, you know, like, do you even have a viable market? So we decided to offer a very small cohort and just focus on those new business owners. And we've toyed with the idea of doing that with business owners who've been in business for a bit, but as I said earlier, business owners are pretty private. They're not like, I want to jump in a group and tell you I don't know what I'm doing. So yeah. I think, you know, it just depends a little bit on what their needs are.
And it's also the one thing I've come with insights of talking to different people. There are actually was like a ridiculous amount of small business owners that actually don't know how to do business.
All day long.
And that's where it was just one of those, I have a mentor call with like every Thursday, and I was just asking him like, hey, so like, kind of like you, I'm like, I'm thinking the same thing, like helping businesses and this and that. And he's like, I'm bet you right now the ice cream shop down the street has no idea what they're doing or their profits. And I'm like, but they've been there for 20 years. He's like, that could have been 20 years of negative, and it's just now going to kick him in the ass with COVID.
Yeah.
And I was like,
you're so right. I think what makes it easy though to help businesses, Josh, is that I was totally the business owner who didn't know what I didn't know. And I tell businesses all the time, I am a special ed teacher by trade. I am an actual teacher by trade. Mm-hmm. So I could teach you how to read and write and do math. However, I founded a business and I learned so many things by making mistakes. And so what I'm great at doing is not making those mistakes 2 or 3 or 4 times over. Maybe 2, but at least not 3 or 4, and then started to document and create a process of how can we solve those problems faster without having to get lost in the weeds and, you know, creating issues. But it's very, very simple. It always comes down to the numbers, right? I say to people, it's a simple math problem, money in, money out. And what was your goal? Maybe you want a business and you only ever want to make a 10% profit margin. Maybe it's 30. Maybe you have a business model that 60% is your profit margin. Tell me how you're doing it, not cutting corners, right?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, just helping get that down. And then the first thing that we do, no matter what, even on your intro call, is where are you bleeding money, right? There's always an obvious reason as to why your company's not performing well. Either people are underperforming, you're overpaying, or your sales aren't good enough, right? That's it. Your fixed costs are too expensive for the business model you got. So figure out where you're bleeding money and stop it, at all costs.
And that was actually one thing when I went out to Chinatown with my buddy, we were just going to look because COVID, we figured no one was going to be in Chinatown anyways, but it was like we went to this restaurant and we're leaving and me and him are outside and he's like, oh, that's a new like print shop. I've never seen that before. And then I looked at him like, cause it says best print friends. I said, I bet you anything, like it was two buddies, like you and me started a shop. One was kind of business savvy, knew what to do, but it was extra fun money. I said, I bet you, because we didn't see it like 2 years ago, they got profitable. And it was the smart business buddy was like, we probably need to actually like get a place to rent and start doing taxes and stuff. I know it's boring. And that's where he sat back and he's like, yeah, see, I wouldn't think like that. He's like, I would have to call a guy like you to figure this out.
Right. And a lot of our clients are clinicians, right? Just like I was a teacher, they're clinicians. Mm-hmm. And they get super excited about the therapy and the clinical outcomes. And I'm like, let's talk about your budget, right? What's your dashboard look like? Let's talk about those KPIs. And I was like, ew, gross, right?
What weird language are you speaking?
Right. I sometimes hear that too.
This one sweet lady, she runs a herbal tea shop kind of thing. And it was just one of those, I saw her recently in Walmart and I was like, hey, how are you doing? She's like, oh, I'm bleeding money left and right. And I'm like, oh, without getting too personal, like, what are you doing? And right. So essentially she told me, she was behind on rent. And it was, I like politely asked her because she's like, God will make everything work. I'm like, well, God's giving you an opportunity right now to not be kicked out. So why aren't you charging more? And she's like, oh, but everyone's struggling. I'm like,
right.
You own a business. A business needs to make money. Even if they doesn't pay, you still need to make money because you got to pay the government. How are you going to pay the IRS? And she just sat there and looked at me and was like, I don't know. I'm like, what is your marketing other than word of mouth? Because we're not meeting in places anymore with COVID. So right. What's your other marketing? And she's like, just word of mouth. I'm like, good luck. I'm gonna say.
And I think you probably nailed it, right? Her issue was people weren't paying her. And so if people don't pay their bills, I tell people your mission can be big, your vision can be huge, but if you don't get payment, you don't have a business. You won't exist. So you can't help anybody if you don't put your business as a priority and have some parameters around that.
And it was just one of those, as I was leaving, I'm like, Linda, you showed me your chart for the prices. And she's like, yeah. I'm like, when was the last time you updated that?
Yeah.
I'm just curious. Cause it was like, she offers like this alternative, like foot baths and massage room and all that. And it was like, for the bath was like $40. I'm like, Linda, you could recently charge $80 a session because it goes an hour and they're using a lot of electricity. I'm like, why aren't you at least charging 80 or charge 100 normally if they don't? And if it's a good someone like 20% off the $20 kind of thing, you're still making double what you were making before and less clients.
Well, the other part of that is figuring out what is it costing Linda to serve her client? And so I always tell people a base model is if you want to do a new line of service or even assess your current line of service, your base profit margin, because I guarantee you'll forget something, is 30%. So if it's costing you $100, I need you to charge a minimum of 30% more. If I can just get you to do that, recognize what it costs to serve, whatever it is, or sell, and then add 30% to it, because sometimes that 30, you know, will be 30, but you'll forget something. So it's really only 24% because you forget about paying your taxes or you forget about that insurance policy you have to have in place or that accountant that you need to pay to do your bookkeeping or the invoicing for your software, whatever it is. So right. I think that is helpful too for businesses to realize is it really is. It comes down to a simple math problem when you're trying to figure out how do you grow or scale your business. And the second part of that is you cannot scale something that is disorganized and messy. And maybe that's the other reason we haven't gone out and advertised like crazy either is because, you know, starting in this new path, I'm not a clinician anymore. I had to redo everything from how we intake clients to what those contracts look like, to how we're going to fulfill and serve them. So we were very cautious as we were starting to make sure that we were putting the right things in place. So we weren't experiencing a bunch of growing pains because I didn't want to be the same entrepreneur I was 20 years ago.
Right. No, and it's a new everything. So it's like, we got to figure out the new method.
Right.
I'm still just thinking about it. What is your package price for the onboarding startup guys that like barely have $1,000 in their account?
Yep. So we currently, the group coaching class, I actually don't know the price of that off the top of my head. I'd have to look on my website because it is that new. But typically those onboarding clients that are coming in brand new startups are $1,500 a month. And then what we offer is a discount. So if you do 3, 6, or 12 months, you get a discount. It's like 5, 10, or 15% off. So if you purchase it up front and you commit to a longer period of time, it gets significantly cheaper. What's really nice about that is, and we also try to offer Friday webinars as often as we can, although right now is kind of our busy season because schools are going back into session and clinics are filling. But for any of our downtime, we try to offer free webinars. So if you've never owned a business and you don't know how to onboard an employee, we've got a checklist for that, which is why I tell people jump on that free 30-minute call, because you and I can sit on the phone and you can say, hey, Allison, I've never hired employees. So what do I need? And we can give you an entire checklist that goes over all the boring things in HR that you need to be a legit business, whether you're a bar owner, a landscaper, or a clinic, right? That's the same because the government regulates that. It's the same for everybody. So we have a sweet little template file that we will give to you, and here's your HR checklist for what you need to make yourself an employee and or to hire employees, and then we'll just give it to you because nobody pays me for my templates. They want to spend time with us to help them to develop their business. So I always tell people, you can ask me for absolutely anything and we will give it to you, because even if you're not a client, because at the end of the day, you're not going to pay me for the templates because you could have found those somewhere on Google. What you want to know is that there's somebody there that's going to help guide you through that process.
That's 100% true. I would you can always buy a template from someone, but you don't know the nuances. Maybe like you're supposed to fill box 2 with a star and not a 3. And you're like, oh crap, what did I do wrong?
That actually, you must be talking about the I-9s. That's what I feel like.
Yep. It's one of those, I joke with my coworkers because they're like, oh, you're such a business person. I'm like, I'm just trying to learn all the rules up front. So when I walk in, I'm not running around like a chicken without a head. And they're like, that'd be funny. I'm like, no, it wouldn't. Cause I'd be sitting there having an ulcer going like, what the hell did I just do wrong?
I know. I think people, what I always tell people, if it's easier for you to digest, look at your business in different lines or different segments, right? Mm-hmm. So look at your HR, look at your finance, look at whatever service you're providing, and then look at your leadership and management. And it doesn't need to be fancy, right? And look at your marketing. That's it. It's pretty simple. And target each one of those. And so if you can break it down into just a very simple model of, I know what I need to do in each one of these. One of my assistants refers to them as silos. I know what to do in each one of these silos to start. And then you're making progress at building an entire business that will work together.
Right. Yeah. I call it like the gears in the machine. Like you can have the big ones, but within the big ones, you could have small ones and it gets even smaller, which would be us kind of thing. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, the big one is like the general thing. So let's call it like a district. That's the big one that takes forever to move. Within it is like the medium sized one. That would be management. Within them is us. And we're the annoying ones constantly breaking.
Right.
And I said, so it's the, you have to look at least three layers or silos for yours and realize, oh, marketing's having trouble for some reason. I wonder if like Jenny is having trouble. I better go give her a chat kind of thing. Just you okay? If like, do we need to talk?
You think the other part of that is learning to be proactive. If there's one good lesson that I had taught myself is you cannot wait in your business for there to be an issue, right? Your job as an entrepreneur is to see around the corner. I think that's what we can help our clients do too, is think about it might be running really, really well. We'll have clients that are so happy. They will say to me, I feel like every week we get on this call and we're making progress and our profit margin is going up. And I always tell people, I don't want to see a big jump. I like systematic growth, right? Like Legos, man, I love stacking it just a little bit because that's sustainable. This massive wild growth is why people end up coming to me because they're like, I'm growing out of control. Fix me now. And I'm like, hang on. So we try to teach them that growth should be systematic. One of the things I tell people often is if you are waiting, like if you're just riding the high because things are going good right now, I guarantee you when that next fire comes up, you are going to be right back on my doorstep. So when things are going well, this is when we start, what potentially could happen with that new line of service you're offering? What potentially could happen, heaven forbid, another COVID hit or whatever it is? And so how are we starting to now plan for what if something bad happens, whether that's now I'm preparing for this, I'm actually making money. So now I'm going to have this massive tax payment I've never had in the past, right? Mm-hmm. Holy cow. When you're losing money and you only have to pay the IRS, like, I don't know, 10 grand or 20 grand a year, that looks a whole lot different than when you're making money and they're asking for $1 million in taxes, or I don't know, even 150,000. I'll never forget the first year I lost money in my very first business. And the second year, my tax bill was $120,000. And I was like bawling. I was like, oh my gosh, that's a lot of money. Like, where am I going to just get $120,000 in cash? Right? Because I had already allocated that money I had made to something else. So now I try to teach my business owners, like, listen, when your business starts running well, you're going to have a high class problem. You've got to pay taxes, or you got to start preparing for what that next level of growth looks like. So how do you start planning and saving and just preparing?
Yeah. And that was, one of them was talking to a different guest about a similar topic with the taxes. I'm like, it's one of those, I've been told this and read it everywhere. The two things we're never to pay, you can skip yourself, is your accountant and your lawyer. As long as you have that, you can pretty much figure out anything else. You'll get your money later.
That's right.
And then one of the guests is like, well, I've heard of something similar, but he's like, well, why the accountant? I'm like, well, he can't do everything, but he can maybe help you save some taxes in the end. But I'm like, the lawyer is, if he gets sued, then he has to go talk to the accountant anyways.
That's right. Those are two pretty important guys to have on your team.
Guys or gals?
Guys or gals. You got it.
So the one thing I'm thinking, because you've hired, you said 500 last time, or is it 500 currently?
Nope, last time.
Okay. So what is your method for vetting through employees?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm the reason HR exists in the world, right? I will tell you that I always have a feeling about people, and it's usually pretty right. How do I vet people? You know, by the time when I had 500 employees, I wasn't hiring them all the time by myself, but my key leaders that I was bringing in, I was very and very invested about ensuring that their mission aligned with mine, that they had some good business sense, or that they were eager and willing to learn. But they were, if I was hiring them to be clinicians, they need to be really passionate about what they did. Mm-hmm. I'm also going to tell you that I have a 3 strikes, you're out rule, right? So if I hire you, that's a risk. I don't know whether or not you and I are going to get along great, but I have 3 strikes, you're out. If in the first 90 days you come across my desk and you're problematic because you can't follow directions, you're having a really difficult time just really engaging in what we're doing, or it is not aligned with our culture, I do not spend a lot of time coaching and training you up. And that's actually one of the things that I see with business owners, is they want to hang on to somebody because they do something a little bit right. And so I say to them, like, wait a minute, if you're actually taking time because now you're doing somebody else's job that you're paying to do, probably not the right employee for you. So I'm also really passionate about what I do. I want to do whatever I'm doing well. And so I think people will come on board, and even my current employees, I think they're excited by the fact that we really do get up in the morning to do right by our clients. I am never trying to, you know, nickel and dime them. I'm always looking out for what's best for their business. And that passion runs through and through all day long. And so I think it's just sincerity, being a good leader and leading consistently. So I think that attracts the right people, and people either love that about it or they hate it, right?
Interesting. I was just thinking, because, like, do you use websites like Indeed, or do they actually have to go to your website and apply?
No, I do use Indeed. So, like, right now I'm helping a client recruit about 15 positions that they have open, and their HR wasn't having a lot of success. Their recruiter wasn't having a lot of success. So I said, why don't I try, right? I know your mission, your vision, your values. Let me represent your company. And so I will go to Indeed and I will pull all the resumes of people who I think would be good for this job. And then I'll just reach out to them directly, right? I will vet them by saying, hey, I saw your resume on Indeed. Here's who we are as a company, and get them so excited about our mission and our vision, or their mission and their vision at this point. And then bring them in for an interview. Because I will tell you, if you can get your employees to see the direction that you're going in, I have never been successful on my own. I have only ever been successful because of the team I've built around me. And that was my biggest fear. I sold my company and I lost a team of people who had been with me for 15 years, you know, plus. And so to start over and not have those people that I relied so heavily on, that was scary, down to the people who were scheduling my appointments, right? Like, I knew, you know, in my previous role, I knew exactly how she was going to schedule me and how I would, you know, she knew how I liked my airplane flights and how she would keep me organized. So having to rebuild a whole new team from scratch, that was scary. And so now I've gone with the same principle, which is I will ensure that whoever we hire is aligned with our mission, our vision, and they're really excited and they want to work for us just as bad as we want them to work. But if it's not working out, I don't hang on to it either. No love loss.
So I'm just the reason what I was going for with that, but I'd love the answer for this one too. It was like, let's say one of my guests was saying, oh, what he did just for fun. He was getting bored. He's like, I told him this whole mission, everything, the job description. He's like, but randomly in the middle, I put, if you really want this job, print me a picture of a cat. He's like, bonus points if it's color. And he's like, don't even bring me your resume. And I'm like, how many showed up? He's like, 56. And I'm like, okay, oh, so wow. 56 cats? He's like, two.
And those two got the job?
And he's like, I was hiring for one, but I hired both.
Oh, that's pretty impressive. I have never done that. I'm not sure how well that'd be received. Although if you're looking for somebody who's reading the fine print and, you know, has a very rigid personality, who's going to read every letter, then that's probably your guy.
That's what he needed. He was like, I was looking for an assistant, but he's like, I was also looking for something out like a whatever for like a bookkeeper.
Yeah, I love that.
And then that's where he's like, I'm not detail oriented. He's like, I'll look at it. I'll get a gist of it. But he's like, that's why I have them. And I'm like, oh, that's, you know, that makes a good point. I'm like, that probably explains why I never got jobs too. I probably missed something like that.
So that's the other lesson in life I have. I don't ever hire anybody that's just like me. The last thing I would ever want in my company is somebody just like me.
Yeah.
I want people who really make me better and probably bring skills to the table that I am definitely lacking in.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to hire from a diverse pool. You don't want you don't want like 15 of you. Cause then it's like, what are we going to get done? Right. Nothing.
You know, I'll just run around and have a great time.
This has been an absolute honor and a pleasure. I have two going out questions for you.
Sure.
So other than work, what have you been doing during this COVID lockdown times to keep busy?
Well, one of the things I forgot to mention is I have 6 children, ages 2, 4, 7, 13, 13, and 16. So
wow, that is a party in and of itself right there.
Uh-huh, it's like a football team. So if I'm not working, I am momming, right? I mom all day long. We live on a farm. We've got horses, cats, dogs, a guinea pig, a couple bunnies, and lots of kids. So if my 6 kids aren't enough, they are a well-socialized group and they always have extras. There's a dozen kids here at any moment. So that is how I spend my life.
Sounds like very busy, but fun life.
It is a good time. If you ever get to South Dakota, come join us.
Oh, definitely. The other question is, and it's kind of been our whole interview, but it's the, what are some tips and tricks or advice for someone aspiring to be like you, a very successful businesswoman, exited? What are some tips, tricks, and advice you would give them?
So I think knowing where you want to be after you've sold your business and have exited is so important. And actually, if you reach out to me, I don't have it on our website, but I've got kind of an inventory that you take of yourself. That's really like, if I'm going to sell my, when people call me and say that, I'm like, let me send you something. It is really lengthy. It is a long checkbox. It's about 5 pages long, but it will get to the bottom and tell you one, where you should focus your time and attention first. But it also helps prioritize if you want to sell your business, what you need to be thinking about on the other side, all the stuff that you only kind of dream of, or you don't even know that you should be thinking about. So one, shoot me an email and I will gladly, you know, get that to you. The other part of that is, you know, don't let your fear get in the way. Cause I think there's so many times where I've either had self-doubt or fear of what's this going to look like? Or can I do this? And I think I've tried to go with the same model of what I would tell my clients, which is just take it out a little bit at a time and watch the growth go systematically. Very fortunate in this new business adventure that it took off so quickly. Super fortunate because I have an amazing team that I work with now of partners and employees who really make the business better. Matter of fact, I think they make it better than I could have ever done on my own. And so I guess don't let your fear cripple you and stop in your tracks.
That's wow. That would like hit me real hard in the heart right there.
Well, getting on a podcast was really nerve-wracking. What they didn't hear before we got on today is that was terrifying for me. I was super nervous to get on and do this interview and I made it and I didn't even have to drink wine to do it. So
just a little Diet Coke and you're good to go.
That's right.
Absolute pleasure to have you on. I would love to chat with you in the future if you're okay with that.
Absolutely, Josh. This was so much fun and part of a really great way to end my Friday. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. Stay safe and stay well. Well, congratulations. You made it to the end. You're an awesome person. Not many make it here. So, being the awesome person that you are, can you do me one more awesome favor? Can you rate and review this on whatever podcast services you're using? If you do it on Apple and you leave an actual written review, I have a thing on my website. I will take your written review and post it for all to see. Congratulations, you're permanently sealed on my site. Otherwise, I am trying to do YouTube more and live streaming. I will try to put as many of the YouTube links in the description of the show as I can. So give your boy some extra help over on YouTube. Watch my videos. I just mute it and change the channel, change the window or something. But yeah, that's it. Thank you for being awesome and see you next time.